Hi, I'm Wendy Francis, nutrition therapist, emotional eating expert, and entrepreneur. I've helped countless people overcome their obsession with food and weight. Isn't it time you overcame what you had become and ignite who you were meant to be? Your time to become an overcomer starts now.
Well, good evening, everybody. And I love always coming to these calls. They are the highlight of my week. I love just bringing new things to think about, learn about, and then to grow together, realistically, because that's what life is all about. Tonight, as we kind of move into January and everybody's kind of reigniting themselves, retraining, relaunching, whatever we want to call it, with respect to food, weight, and body, as I mentioned last week on the call, the interesting part about 2023 is that number one on New Year's resolutions this year and first year is to get into therapy, which was super interesting to me. Number two, though, was weight loss, which has been 19 to 20 years running, realistically. And so about this time, we're kind of in the mid-January, for anybody who's reignited themselves or made new intentions or resolutions, whatever way that you call that, people are kind of coming back into taking care of their body, maybe losing weight. And what most people think about when they think about weight loss is not realistically the psychology of it. Everybody thinks about, well, how am I going to exercise? Or how am I going to eat on this plan? Or what's this plan's eating diet like, right? Or what's this new trainer doing? Or what's this new place doing? Is it points? Is it carbs? Is it fat? Is it protein? Is it water? What is it, right? Everybody talks about those parameters, but nobody really ever. I never really heard anybody say, well, they have a really good psychological backbone to their program. And I am going to bring light to the subject today because I really know and believe that if you don't have the psychology to lose weight, it is very difficult to maintain and sustain, realistically, and to move in the way that you want to go. Psychology really is our key to life. And it's our key to weight loss. And the reality is we've kept these two things separate for too long. Dieting goes back at least as far as the 3rd century BC, which is super interesting to me. It's back that far. I really thought it was like 1950s. According to Lewis Foxcroft, who is the author of Calories and Corsets, A History of Dieting Over 2,000 Years, she actually says that followers of the ancient Greek physician Hippocrates recommended a diet of light and emollient foods, slow running, hard work, wrestling, seawater enemas, walking about naked, and vomiting after lunch. Super interesting because I have an eating disorder background to hear what Hippocrates recommended. And I just didn't realize it went back that far. The Greeks believed that being fat was morally and physically detrimental, the result of luxury and corruption. So food and living should be plain, with nothing to unduly stir the passions or arouse the appetites. This was the first documented diet, or dietia, was back in that 3rd century BC. Super interesting, right? All the way back there. Things were being recommended how to eat, how to move your body, and then even vomiting after lunch, which is another kind of interesting premise. But again, nothing about the psychology. After this time period, the ancient Greeks, it's believed that it wasn't then until the year 1087 that dieting was mentioned again in the literature. Apparently, that's when William the Conqueror had become too heavy to ride his horse. Poor guy. So he decided that he would stop eating solid foods and only partake in a liquid diet that consisted only of alcohol in an attempt to lose weight. If this tale is true, this is the first recorded instance in which an individual changed his or her food intake habits to actually lose weight to do his duties, so to speak. Although it was never documented whether or not this diet worked, William actually later died from a horse accident, which led historians to believe that the diet was somewhat successful if he was able to actually ride that horse, right? So again, another instance of giving the recommendation to only partake in a liquid diet of alcohol, which I don't know how that would go in our culture. But again, super interesting. And again, no mention of psychology. Since William's liquid diet, thousands of other diet theories have surfaced. We could go through them. We can start nearly 150 years ago. There was a gentleman named William Banting. He was advised by his doctor to begin journaling about his diet because he was not feeling healthy and noticed he put on weight. This, in fact, in history is the first food journal. Super interesting, right? What Banting did was not far from the principal belief in today's dieting world. He cut the sugars and starches from his meals, and he became the first to record the progress achieved by consuming a low-carbohydrate diet. He ate only protein, meat, poultry, fish, along with a combination of green vegetables and fruit. Banting lost 50 pounds in less than 12 months. It was actually cited by Edwards, 2003. So super interesting, right? First food journal that we see, and he clearly was successful in his weight loss, but again, no mention of the psychology. Remarkably, Banting's diet is almost identical to a famous diet that many people use today. This protocol remains one of the foundations of our conventional diet belief system, and it continues to follow the same pattern it did for Banting, average weight loss of around 1 pound per week. Super interesting, right, what he did and what some diets do today. Not long after the success of Banting's diet, companies began marketing a variety of products to promote weight loss. So this is going back about 150 years ago, where we really see this surgence come about. Again, I really thought it was probably more like 50 years ago. So super interesting. And then it really began, right? We kind of saw this onslaught of laxatives, purgatives. In the past, they used arsenic, strychnine, thyroid hormones, amphetamines, and other products and medications to help people lose weight. Although they're proven dangerous, there's a surviving underground belief today that people can lose weight with these chemicals. Now, I know that in today's society, not anybody that I know is using arsenic or strychnine, but there is a hormonal premise. Amphetamines, although we may not call them that, there are some medications that are on the market that are marketed to help people lose weight that essentially are amphetamines or speed or high levels of caffeine or mahuang or some other things that are used to stimulate what we would think to stimulate metabolism. What they really are doing is giving a surge of caffeine and stimulants to make the individual less hungry. So what do we know, right? So that's what began, and then it moved more into food and more different diet premises as we saw then come about in the 50s. And Weight Watchers, and then started to really roll. Then diet sodas were put on the market, more and more diets were put on the market, different premises, different books, different subscripts, different places, different people. But the whole premise really being around the physical components of food. What do you eat? And then some combine what do you eat with what? How do you move, right? So exercise and food. And then you will have some that add in the medication component. Some doctor-supervised programs do add in the medication component. But therein lies the interesting factor, right? Because we recognize that we know that calories really don't matter now, although that wasn't the premise back in the 50s and 60s. We know now that whole foods are the best way to do this. We know now that hunger and fullness realistically have to be understood, monitored, and shifted, although that's a newer premise coming about in the late 90s. But we also know that as a country, we're getting larger by the minute and more emotionally and behaviorally unsound with our eating. So we have evolved so much with our food and exercise, but we still haven't tackled the emotional and behavioral component. If we had tackled it with food and exercise, we wouldn't have these statistics. The global weight loss management market is expected to reach $206 billion. That's what it reached in 2019, which was up from $148 billion. So we know that we haven't tackled it. We're not seeing it in the numbers. Factors driving the growth of this market are obviously the people that are not necessarily just obese or overweight, but people that want to lose weight. We know that obesity rates continue to climb in the United States, as high as 35% in some states, and continuing to climb. We know that obesity is known to reduce lifespan, lead to disabilities, illnesses like diabetes. The CDC predicts 1/3 of all adults will have diabetes by 2050. Obese individuals are twice as likely to be prescribed prescription drugs. We know that because they have to monitor their blood sugars. Currently, CDC reports that 73 million Americans fall into the category of obesity, but we also know that there's a majority of people in the overweight category. The reason why I'm saying these statistics, because I'm not trying to preach to the choir necessarily, I'm saying these statistics because if we had tackled weight loss, if we had really figured out the solution, these statistics wouldn't be as such. We would have seen a decreasing trend since the 50s and 60s, and not the increasing trend. We know now that obesity affects 19% of our children and adolescents. So it's not just affecting adults, it's affecting children as well. What we know is that we haven't incorporated, so in the last 10 years, we have seen, maybe 12, we've seen the resurgence of positive psychology, what we call positive psychology, in business, in careers, in growth patterns, even in school guidance counselors, they know about the use of positive psychology. Where we haven't used that is realistically in helping people manage their weight, lose weight, maintain weight, etc. Fairburn and Beglin did a major study a few years ago, and it stated that about 1 in 2 individuals trying to control their weight say they have binged in the last month. It's very difficult to lose weight if you feel compelled to overeat. Research, I know this, reports that 86% of all individuals who have dieted 2 or more times have some facet of emotional eating. That research was done by the American Psychological Association, and it continues to alarm me because we still don't listen to these reports, and we don't combine the psychology. We know so much about the psychology of success. If you listen to Tony Robbins or Jim Rohn, you can also listen to Carl Jung, which, you know, he talks about a number of other things, right, Jungian psychology. But whether you're really going for that, listening to that PhD in psychology, or listening to an amazing strategic coach like Tony Robbins or some of the other greats out there, we know that the psychology really determines our success in career and life, but nobody is bringing this over to how you lose weight. And we know, Tony Robbins indicates this, he says, 80% of success is your psychology. Now, he's talking about business and life, but I'm going to tell you, I've been working in the field for 30 years, I absolutely know this to be true for weight loss, weight gain, changing your body, loving your body, whatever you want to call the parameter that you're in. When it comes to our body, our food, our relationship with our food, we need the success behind it. So what is the psychology of weight loss? Because we don't talk about it. And it's really hard to capture with respect to a definition. But what I would define it as is a combination of our thoughts, feelings, actions, and beliefs, things you may have heard in life or business, but also realistically relate to your success in body change. So whether that's weight loss or weight gain, working with individuals with anorexia for years, I always had to work with their psychology, right? How did they view food? How did they feel about it? Why were they not eating? It's the same thing for why we overeat or why we can't change what we eat. You have a specific formula for success. It's just learning how to find it. That's the psychology. There's a number of ways to work with your psychology around your weight loss. And part of why I do the podcast that I do the calls that I do the groups that I do my individual sessions is because I always want to be able to help people find their formula for success. And there's multiple ways to do that. It's part of why I wrote the Overcoming Emotional Eating book that I just put out on Amazon. I did that because I wanted people to have some tools to use, and there's a plethora. But if I were to boil it down to the top three, I wanted to give you some takeaways because I never present a problem without a solution, which is really the first step in the psychology of weight loss, right? Identify your obstacles and solutions. If you can, even before they happen. So if you know why you couldn't stick to a certain plan in the past, understand that before you move forward. If you know how you get thrown off by things, understand that because then you can change it. So identify those obstacles. What were they for you in the past? And can you find a solution? And the solution can't be, well, I'm just going to do it now. It can't be the solution because the reality is if you were going to do it, you would have done it. So really find some strategic solutions to help you through that. Number two, and this has to be a has to, right? Take out the shame. Number one thing that I believe brings people down from their food, whatever way it is shame. So if you go off track or off course, for my clients with anorexia or bulimia, it could be that they eat a little bit too much. And then that shame would come in, and then they would have to take it into their own hands in a different way. My clients who overeat or who are trying to lose weight, you eat a little bit too much, and well, then you just throw the towel in, and then you keep on going. And that happens because shame takes you down the path. So stop letting shame take you away. You've got to get the shame out so you can learn about it objectively, just like you would look at your finances. Some of us, finances are emotional, and I get it. But the more you can take the shame and emotion out, the better off you will be. And three, identify and change your underlying beliefs about food and or weight. I go into this a lot in my book, and I actually have another book called Shattering the Belief Code that I wrote years and years ago because I believe so much in beliefs. What we say to ourselves dictates where we go in life. It's so true. And it's the hardest thing to know, understand, identify, and change. Because you really need somebody external, or you need to just be hyper-vigilant in understanding it about yourself. But we have those same beliefs in our food. So I'm a carbohydrate addict, or I'm a sugar addict. That's a belief. I'll always be X pounds. That's a belief. Now, sometimes there's maintenance and plateauing, and that's a whole other conversation for another day. But understanding and changing and identifying your beliefs around your food and your weight is imperative because those are the things that really hold you back. Changing your psychology in anything changes your everything. And if you change the psychology of your weight loss, you won't only be successful, you'll feel successful. And therein lies the fourth key. What is an action without the feeling? Truth is really nothing, right? If you're interested in the psychology of weight loss and understanding a little bit more, you can check out my website, www.wendyfrancis.com. There's a free ebook on there. Go under books. Go to the bottom. There's a free ebook entitled The Psychology of Weight Loss. Please go on there. Print that out if this interested you. I really believe that this is the key for so many people, and it can really change where you are. Remember, changing your psychology in anything changes your everything.
Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, share it with a friend. Rate, review, and subscribe. You never know who you'll help become the next overcomer.